Are you looking for inspiring conversations about faith, film, and life? You're in the right place. Here's the host who knows the right questions to ask, Father Edward Looney.
Hey, everybody, it's Father Edward Looney here, and I'm delighted to have a spiritual conversation today on the show with a Benedictine monk. He is a monk in Ireland. We'll talk more about his vocation, his abbey. I'm speaking with Dom David today, and looking forward to this conversation because they're introducing, or should I say reintroducing, a work that was done in the past about St. Therese of Lisieux. It's called Just for Today, and looking forward to this conversation. So thanks so much, Dom David, for joining me today.
Yeah, thank you so much, Father. It's great to be here. I'm delighted to have this opportunity to talk to you and share a little bit about myself, the monastery, as well as the book. I mean, it's really quite a treasure chest, I have to say. Yeah.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about your own life. So obviously, if people are watching the video, you're a young monk. So what led you to the monastery, to renounce the world and to follow this call of God?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's kind of a long story. I actually grew up the son of Protestant missionaries in Kathmandu, Nepal. So growing up, I was, I guess, surrounded by a family that cared deeply about the faith. and who really inculcated a lot of beautiful practices and beautiful disciplines into my life. And then when I was about, I think I was 12 years old, we moved from Nepal to the US, to Texas. And then there, after my older brother went to Baylor University in Waco, and he was studying great books, so you know, lots of beautiful patristic texts, you know, history, philosophy, theology, literature, all of it. And he started to think, well, you know, maybe there are 1500 years before we came along. What happened in those years? And so he started to convert, and he and I are very close friends. So he bounced a lot of his ideas off of me. I'm 4 years younger than him. And after that, you know, I started thinking, well, you know what, this Catholic thing sounds about right. And then I went to Baylor, and I started encountering Eucharistic adoration. Well, first of all, the first time that I went to Mass, I was absolutely blown away by its beauty, by its splendor. I never experienced something so powerful, perhaps other than when I was baptized, but it was really something incredibly special. And so I started attending daily Mass at the student parish right by the university. And also they had adoration every day before Mass, and so I would go to adoration, and that really spoke to my heart, as it were. And then after my conversion, rather quickly, I started considering religious life. I don't know. The motives for that are probably mixed and varied, but the idea of giving oneself wholly to God in a vocation, it's not something that you find in other and other sects of Christianity. It's really something unique to Catholicism, that you know, a person can dedicate their entire life just to God. And I mean, I'm saying that even coming from being the child of missionaries. I mean, in a sense, missionaries, you know, they're dedicating their entire life to serving the Lord, you know. But this religious vocation of renouncing everything, you know, even your own family, your own land, you know, all of that, because you love God above everything else, it's unique. So I thought, well, this is a really powerful testament to the truth of the Catholic faith, an extremely powerful testament to the faith. And as perhaps fittingly enough, as the Mass was sort of a touchstone that and my entry point into discovering Catholicism, the liturgy and the Mass always was sort of in the forefront of my mind, and something I cared a lot about. And I suppose where you go from there is to the Benedictines, perhaps, given that their central focus is, you know, the Divine Office, the Liturgy of the Hours, the Mass. That is their main concern, as the rule of Saint Benedict says: put nothing before the work of God. So my mind and my heart just naturally gravitated towards the Benedictines. And yet, as I mentioned earlier, the adoration played such a pivotal role in my conversion to the Catholic faith that when I discovered a Benedictine monastery of perpetual adoration, something that's actually unique to Silverstream around the world, you have some monasteries that do adoration. But the charism here actually follows off of a 17th century reform of the Benedictine order that adores in a spirit of reparation. So anyways, once I discovered Benedictines and adoration, I kind of want to go visit and see what they're like. And so I came here and I received some tremendous graces the first time that I came here. I remember, that time of when I was in college, it was kind of a difficult period of my time at universities, going through various things, but came here and the Lord relieved me of a lot of it, and certainly started the healing process in a big, big way. And so my heart kept on being called back to this monastery, and I continued to pursue a vocation here. Visited for a number of months, and then at the beginning of 2020, by God's providence, right before COVID exploded, I managed to make my way here and enter into the monastery. So yeah,
I'm curious. You started your whole story by saying, "I'm the son of Protestant missionaries to Nepal," and then I'm curious how they've received this. Have they converted to Catholicism? Were they convinced of the truths of the Church and the Fathers as you were? Or are they still Protestant missionaries? What do they make of your vocation?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I can say the story isn't over yet. They certainly, through my conversion and my older brother's conversion, they certainly went more towards that direction. They did become more traditional and considered and looked at the teachings of the Church more seriously. Currently, they're stopping off in an Anglican church. Hopefully, it's just a stop along the way. Please God. But they, my parents have been actually incredibly supportive as time has gone on. So at the beginning, of course, it's totally out of the blue. It's, you know, what in the world is this? This is really, you know, monasticism. This is really weird. It looks really cultic. I don't know what's going on. You guys are like, Catholics have something strange in this whole celibate priesthood and like what, and monasticism, and what is this, you know? And so like there was certainly a lot of that at the beginning, but they, thanks be to God, I mean, they've been incredibly gracious and keeping an open mind and sort of over the years, picking up the journey with me, as it were. At the beginning, though, it was really hard. And when I first entered, it was really hard. They've really come to think, even from where they are in Protestantism, to think that no, monasticism is a really essential part of the Christian body. it really is the heartbeat of the world, that's, and I suppose in there, as they once put it, that it's just having that. Of course, they still don't want their son to be one of the people in the monastery. You know, they do want him to, they do want me to be back plenty of times. But at the same time, they do appreciate this vocation a lot, and they see the beauty of it, and they've certainly come around to be free, as it were. You know,
You know, there are Benedictines here in the United States. I was trained at Conception Abbey for 2 years, so familiar with the Benedictine way of life. I have a great love for monasticism myself as a result. So there's monasteries here in the United States, but they typically are the ordinary form, as we would call it, the Novus Ordo of the Mass. But you belong to Silverstream Priory in Ireland, and they tend to be more of an extraordinary form, celebrating more traditional Latin Mass. So what drew you to the Latin Mass and to the extraordinary form side of Catholicism?
Yeah, so as I mentioned in my conversion, so the first Mass I went to was a Novus Ordo, and the daily Masses that I would always go to, they were Novus Ordo. I was graced to have a very reverent priest who put the Mass first and himself second. But along with that, there was, I have to admit that there was a certain amount of reactionism from Protestantism, in that, you know, once I become Catholic, it's like, if things don't look and feel really Catholic, you know, and it's, so I have to admit that, you know, there's some mixed motives at the beginning in going towards, like, well, the extraordinary form just looks more ancient than the Novus Ordo, and then, you know, I'm trying to be more ancient. But you know, God works in his ways and in mysterious ways, and nonetheless that kernel of the Mass as something that is meant to be a beautiful offering to God. I found the extraordinary form first, just in its rites, you know, in the solemnity of its rites, to be a consistently beautiful offering to God. I had a conversation with someone not too long ago, saying that there's something about the extraordinary form that you can tell that it truly is the sacrifice of Calvary. Your sacrifice, the priest is sacrificing on the altar. He's participating in that sacrifice. He is both priest and victim along with Christ. I have to agree with that. That millennial tradition of the Mass is has really articulated that truth about the Mass very, very well. And so first, yeah, as I said, the rites and the beauty of it, drew me, but then even discovering the texts afterwards, as it were, first it was just the external beauty, and then going more internally into the calendar, into the texts of the Mass, discovering the way that things are weaved together. You know, it's very clear that there's an intensely, I guess, patristic, an apostolic mindset behind how the texts were put together, because you know, how different propers play off of each other, how readings play off of each other. It's not just sort of like here's one passage and we're going to read that. These two passages are placed next to each other for a reason, and then even with the calendar, the way that it you know, the year-long cycle, I really appreciate just the single year cycle versus the 3-year cycle, partly because I don't have a 3-year memory. A 1-year memory is a little bit more tenable, perhaps. And so, every year going into the same thing over and over again, and seeing it recapitulate every year, like, oh, you know, sure, this is where I am, whereas last year I was here, now this year. So all of that, and then of course the prayers of the Mass as well, the canon, all of it. So I just, yeah, ultimately it's just, I found it's exquisitely beautiful.
Yeah, I love what you just said there about like just seeing where you are at a particular moment, like from last year to this year. So I'm actually writing a book right now it's a 2-part book, one for Advent, one for Lent. And so I'm working on the Lent. The Advent one is done, but for Sophia Institute, who is the publisher of the book we're going to talk about here in just a moment. But so the book is reflecting on the collects of the Novus Ordo for the season of Advent, because every day has a unique prayer. Every day in Lent has a unique prayer. And so I started writing the book last year, kind of dropped it, you know, lost interest. So picked it up this year again and committed to obviously doing it with a contract, et cetera. But it's so funny because like I probably only wrote 3 or 4 days last year. So I went to one of them that I wrote and I read what I wrote there. And it was just so interesting for me to see where I was last year, what I focused on in that prayer, as compared to this year, as I re-encountered that prayer again, and what I thought of and what I wrote about this year or said about it. So that is kind of the beauty of being able to return to this source over and over again. Yeah. And at least in the Novus Ordo, that experience, to me, I believe you have it with Advent and Lent with these prayers and to really pray, you know, as the church prays and to really interiorize and understand the meaning of these collects, these prayers. So here we are, we're chatting today about not only the monastic life, but your monastery has put together, republished a book available from Sophia Institute Press. It's called Just for Today, compiled and translated from the writings of Saint Therese with selections from the Imitation of Christ. So how did we get here? How is it that you, a member of Silver Stream Priory, is speaking with me today about this book that isn't written by someone in your monastery? You know, just kind of paint the picture. How are we having this conversation today?
Yeah. So our monastery, we started a publishing house called the Cenacle Press, and mostly what we focused on doing is republishing works from the Benedictine, from all over, but from the Benedictine tradition in particular, because we find that there's something really special that Benedictines have to offer, and you know, some beautiful writings from over the centuries. As I said, we do publish other things as well, but that's been one of our focuses is republishing these texts. And so we found this text Just for Today and thought, you know, what a brilliant idea, putting Saint Therese and the Imitation of Christ together, because as some may be familiar with, Saint Therese practically had the Imitation of Christ memorized. It was her favorite book. It formed her interior life, probably more than anything else, before her entry into the Carmel, and even during her time there, that just the way that she thinks, the way that she lives, it's just living and breathing that text, the Imitation of Christ. And so she compiled this book, basically finding these passages of where Saint Therese is very clearly in her own writings and her poems and her letters, where she's very clearly drawing from the Imitation of Christ. But as with a lot of ancient texts, sometimes they're a little bit harder to digest. And so, but we get Saint Therese interiorizing this text of the Imitation. Mm. And giving it back to us in, I guess, it's a text that's gone through a heart, and then it's coming back out, and we're seeing a, you know, a love and a life lived according to this. And so it helps, they both help to interpret each other, as it were. Sometimes it's very similar text. Sometimes it's just, wow, St. Therese basically just lived this passage from the Imitation. So there are some accounts from the Story of a Soul, for example, where she just does something, or there's a text from the Imitation, and then there's an account of what she did. And it's like, well, you just lived that. This nun put together, it was back in the 50s that she did put together this compilation, and then we thought it needs to be something in print, because it's something that can really feed the faithful. And so we published it, and thanks to our relationship with Sophia Institute Press, they've really grabbed onto it and thought to promote it. So
you have this Benedictine nun in the 1950s, as it were, looking at the writings of, you know, the Imitation of the Christ and Story of a Soul and the other works of St. Therese. So it's kind of, then you have this nun who is receiving the spiritual tradition, and she's compiling it. So there's a lot going on there to see how the Imitation of Christ is being played out in Story of a Soul or the writings of Therese, and then how this nun sees it. So it's kind of like third generation then of being touched by these texts of the church. Now, this nun was from the monastery in Stanbrook, Worcester. Yeah. Where is that monastery? Where is that located?
So they're in England. They're just across the water from us. They're still around, and they still have. I don't know the size of their community,
I think it's interesting too when you just think about it that here you have a Carmelite nun who lived the spiritual life, a doctor of the church. And you just see her influence, that it's just not for Carmelites. It's not just, just a small group of Catholicism. But, you know, this is a sister, a nun, a saint, St. Therese, who has impacted the whole universal church, and that has touched the heart of a Benedictine nun who compiled then this work. So I guess you just see the universality of St. Therese. And what does St. Therese mean to you? Because I know in the life of so many priests and monks and religious, that really her insights in the spiritual life, the Story of a Soul, it all has had an impact on us in some way, shape, or form.
Absolutely. I mean, if I can actually quote from the introduction, that I think is the introduction is written by Ronald Knox, but I think he touches his finger on this exact thing, that so the compiler of this anthology has been happily inspired to sit between two treasure chests, dealing out to us a jewel, first from this, then from that, like matched pearls. One is the Imitation of Christ, the other the writings of Saint Therese of Lisieux. Your first impression when you see the pearls so well matched is to exclaim at the resemblance. Your second, that after all, Christian piety does not alter with the ages, and there are certain rock-bottom truths which need constant reassertion, rather because our wills are so weak than because our memory has let the tradition slide. And it's so true. Is, you know, You mentioned Saint Therese. Of course, she's a Carmelite, and then there's this Benedictine nun receiving her. But even the Imitation of Christ, you know, written by Thomas Kempis, an Augustinian, there's this common treasure chest of the church that's inexhaustible, you know. And of course, for Saint Therese, she then passes that on in such a beautiful way to us. And I mean, for myself, I consider myself to be a very, very weak person. And so, you know, with things like St. Therese's Little Way, or, you know, the consolation that she offers people to do small things with love, you know, not being intimidated by the by, you know, you have to be something grand and, you know, you have to change the world and you have to all of this. Because I mean, that's the narrative that's very much popular in secular society as well. You know, at every school, every university, you guys are the world changers. You're going to do great things. You're going to go out and save the whole mess. But then Saint Therese, you know, receiving the wisdom of the church, then passes it on to us and says, no, what really matters is love. Do what you can and do it with love. And, you know, a very simple message. And perhaps that's said simplistically. There's a lot to Saint Therese. There's not just that, but that simple message, is quite, is really profound. And if I'll quote from her, from the book, actually what the book is named after, or why the book has its name Just for Today, is from one of her poems. It's on January 18th. And it should be inscribed in gold. So, I do not lift my eyes to see the clouds next day may bring. From stain of sin, Lord, keep me free this day beneath thy wing. I can endure just for today the cross that thou wilt send. The daily grace for which I pray will help me to the end. And also, so, you know, that living for, you know, just for today, God is offering us a grace. And yeah, he's stretching it out for us to receive it. And if we are able to receive it and live just for today, live in that present moment, you know, as the imitation and as Saint Therese is saying there, is living in that present moment, living in the presence of God. I mean, there's in monasticism, there really isn't any other way to do it. Otherwise, you know, if you look at the long stretch and you say, oh no, this is 60 years of this, what am I going to do? But no, it's God is here today. God is here now.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I know in life and ministry, like I always focus on just serving the Lord right now. This is how he's calling me to serve him in this present moment, you know? So yeah, you can get overwhelmed by thinking about the future or what it might bring. But I just focus on serving him right now and who he places in my life. And that's all I can do. So I love that. I love that just for today. So you mentioned a date there, like January 18th. So is this book, like, does it have daily meditations for every day of the year? Or what does the reader expect when they pick up this book, when they begin using it in their spiritual life?
Right. So yeah, that's exactly it. Every day of the year from January 1st to December 31st, unfortunately, it does not have February 29th. So this year,
I was going to ask that.
Well, you'll have to miss out on a day. But yeah, every day of the year, it has a short passage from the Imitation and then a short passage from Saint Therese, offering a grace just for the day.
So this is just kind of like my observation. So I notice in the details of the book, 244 pages. So obviously there might be a meditation, you know, there's about 100 or so meditations, maybe two on a page or something like that. If you're looking at it in that regard, in terms of, you know, not every day has its own dedicated page, I guess, which is just an interesting observation, I guess, to make. So, but yeah, that's beautiful that it's a daily devotional. And the thing with daily devotionals is that you don't necessarily have to have started on January 1st. You can order this. You could get it. You could start it on our Easter day this year or something like that. You could start on April 1st and just begin, right? Like is there a rhyme or a reason to start and do it straight through January 1 to December 31st? Or can you just pick it up and do it whenever?
You can just pick it up. There's not even explicit, I guess, focus on liturgical seasons, for example. So since it's not saying, okay, now we're entering into Lent because those dates change. Well, you know, typically March is always in Lent, so there might be some focus, and then April and May, there's a bit more joyful things. But no, it's just you can pick it up whenever, and you can read it, and you can read it the next year, and you can read it the next year, and there's no need to say, oh well, January 1st is past, and I can't. You know what? Yeah. I'm already halfway through the book, and I haven't read that half. So no, it's just pick it up and start receiving the graces that are on offer.
Yeah. And then just to think of the title, just for today, like, you know, and maybe even if I read it sporadically and it's not something I'm doing daily, but like the day that I pick it up, maybe that content was meant for me just for that day. And I read exactly what I needed at the exact right time in my own life, in my spiritual life. It's the inspiration, the pick me up that I needed to get through the day or the week or the month or whatever it is. So, I think that title, Just for Today, from St. Therese herself, quite appropriate, quite fitting, something I'm going to be thinking about and incorporating, implementing into my own life and mentality and such. So very powerful. So I'm grateful that Silverstream has put together this work, really renewing. It's one of my favorite things is when you kind of discover something that's old and you kind of represent it, you and like just making new again the writings that maybe haven't been read or discovered by this generation. And so that's what you guys have done there. And I'm sure you'll keep doing that with the works coming out in the future. So thanks so much, Brother Dom, thanks for joining me, Dom David, today speaking about St. Therese and about your vocation and just giving witness to this life lived in the church.
Thank you. Well, thank you so much for hosting me and for giving me the opportunity to talk a little bit about the monastery, a little bit about the book. And I encourage all the listeners to check out the Cenacle Press, you know, look at take a look at our other books, see if there's anything else that you guys want. Absolutely. Thank you very much.
So Sophia Institute Press picked up Just for Today, or does it have Cenacle Press as an imprint on the back? Are they just distributing it? What's the relationship?
Right. Yeah, no, so it is the Cenacle Press that's the official publisher, and Sophia is
authorized
to distribute. They're like, well, this sounds like a great book. Can we help you with it? And so
sure. They've
been very generous for sure.
Well, that's wonderful. And so Just for Today, you can head over to Sophia Institute Press's website. You can acquire it there. You can acquire it from Cenacle Press or wherever you buy Catholic books. It seems like the right book for your devotional life to help you to love the Lord Jesus all the more in imitation of Jesus, inspired by St. Therese of Lisieux. Thank you so much, Dom David, for joining me today. And check out their monastery, Silverstream. I'll provide all the links in the show notes or the description today. And until next time, God bless.
If you liked today's episode, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you're listening. And don't forget to stay up to date with what Father Edward is doing by following him on Facebook, X, or Instagram at the handle @FREdwardLooney. Thanks for listening, and please join Father Edward again next time for another inspiring conversation.